This is Rock and Roll Grad School with your hosts, Professors Heidi Hedquist and Luke Poling. And yeah, they don't pay their TAs enough.
Hello, kiddies. We're going to have a good time together. Or should we say we're going to be grooving together?
I think we should say we're going to be
grooving. Yeah, you like how I did that?
Worked it in? That was well done. We should actually be grooving often.
Really, more often than we do.
Yeah, I agree.
Because as you know, people got to be free.
Indeed, they do.
We are talking with Felix Cavallari from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Rascals, who has a new memoir out.
Yes, indeed.
And it covers all of your favorite stories and more.
Yeah, he's got some really good stories.
And he was in a good mood. He was a fun hang.
He was a super fun hang. Some great philosophies on life.
Mm-hmm. You guys talked about yoga for a while.
We did.
I was able to go get a sandwich. It was great.
It was perfect. What more could we want?
Everybody wins.
Everybody wins. No, it's definitely a good listen.
So here is what I wanted to ask you. Are you familiar with the website? I believe it's pronounced Vrbo.
Yes.
It's sort of an Airbnb, but not. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I keep getting this ad shared to me on Instagram, and I'm going to hold this up to the camera. I want you to look at this house and tell me, do you recognize it?
No.
Okay. So, and it just says on the bottom, private vacation home in Socrates, find the perfect escape with plenty of space for your entire family to relax and reconnect. So they show this house and they say, go hang out with your family. So I was looking at it. I was like, this looks really familiar. And then I did a little.
I mean, the image, first of all, is not. Right. It doesn't appear to be the front of the house. It appears to be.
It is not correct.
The garage with a side door.
Right.
So they've deliberately not given you the front. So is it the Amityville house?
Nope. So where would that door that you see there in the bottom lead to?
The basement.
Exactly. So that house is Big Pink.
Ah.
Where Dylan and the band recorded the basement tapes, and the band wrote all of the music for Big Pink.
I see.
Now, this is
a basement at all.
No, a quite musical basement.
Yes.
Now, this house is available on Vrbo. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen photos on other sites saying, like, oh, Big Pink is now a B&B. You can go stay there. What's the basement look like? It's a little bit different. They've replaced the furnace, but you can stand there and be like, this is where they recorded all these songs. Nowhere in that ad does it say there's something really cool that happened in this house that you might want to be around.
But they that's deliberate.
Is it?
Well, they probably want
to. If you sent me a picture of that house and said, do you want to stay there for the weekend? I would say, no, not on your life. If you sent me a picture of that house and said, this is where the band live and Dylan hung out and they wrote, you know, The Weight and This Wheel's on Fire, suddenly I'm a little more interested. Tell me more. Is there a discount coupon I can use?
Of course. You would still want the discount.
Oh, I'm a couponer. What do you want?
I'm a loyalty clubber, not a couponer.
Interesting. So your key ring is just overrun with barcodes.
Now it's my phone. But, yeah, but what if they thought they'd get like an onslaught of crazy rabid music fans and maybe they just want to control, and they figure people who really know, like you knew enough and were enough of a fan to go, this looks familiar, and figured it out. So they only want the smart super fans to figure it out.
Maybe I simply read a certain level of Dylan nerds online.
Right.
That it is just taken as gospel and it's written, well, that's Big Pink. That's what you want to go stay there. I just feel like you could have a full course meal off of just Dylan nerds wanting to go stay there, to say nothing of your band nerds. Speaking of which, there's a great Twitter account, and this has nothing to do with anything, of a woman in, I think she's in San Francisco, who is obsessed with the band and has started a Richard Manuel archive.
That's amazing.
All stuff of his life and his work and everything, a complete aside. But let's say you were a Richard Manuel completist.
Mm-hmm.
you want to go stay there. You want to go stay where Levon Helm, you know, you want to go see where Levon Helm and Rick Danko are buried. It's right nearby.
Makes sense. I
say we've got the better service than Airbnb. No offense, Airbnb. We are available for sponsorship. Then to say, do you want to stay at Big Pink? Much as if you were listing the Amityville house, to use your example, on, let's say, Airbnb, you would be like, who wants to stay in the Amityville house? People don't stay at the Lizzie Borden house because it's got a really nice view and the breakfast is supposed to be great.
I agree, but I think it depends on perhaps these particular people are not music fans. They just have a spare house they want to rent.
These people don't exist.
These people exist. A lot of these people exist.
I don't believe
people didn't exist, our show would have way bigger numbers.
That's true.
Because everyone would get it and then there'd be no purpose for us. So
I was just very confused by the, like, because I was staring at it going, that's Big Pink, right? And then started to do that thing when I saw Sunvolt 20 years ago, mm-hmm. and I got there early, I was right up front, and all of a sudden I look to the side of the stage because I'm so close I could see into the wings, and I look over and go, oh my god, that's Roger McGuinn. And then he ended up coming out and doing a song with him, but mm-hmm. for that entire section of the encore when he wasn't on stage, my first thing was, oh my god, that's Roger McGuinn,
right?
And then I spent the rest of that being like, is it Roger McGuinn? It is. Like, my first knee-jerk reaction was guy from the Birds without the weird little glasses, but that's him.
Right.
And then I spent 20 minutes being like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I just, in the excitement of, you know,
the moment.
Right. Is that Chris Hillman in his afro? No. Is it, you know, is it Gene Clark? No. It's not Crosby. I'm just saying, I doubt myself sometimes.
I understand. We're working on that.
One, two, three. Good love.
Congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
You know, some people don't like going back into their history to write these. You hear musicians being like, I don't want to dig all this up. Did you have that problem, or did you enjoy the process of pulling these stories together?
I completely understand that. You know, it's difficult to speak about yourself for 3 years, you know. It's really, I'll tell you what happened real briefly. In 2013, the original Rascal members, we did a kind of like a Broadway show called Once Upon a Dream. Mm-hmm. And during that period of time, we were asked to do a press conferences. Well, I noticed that every single one of us had a different answer for the same questions. And I said to myself, wait a second. Did Custer really win or lose that battle? You know, I mean, we don't know.
Right.
Everybody had a different answer. And I said, you know, I think it's important for my sanity that I at least put down my story, so to speak. So it started off with this type of endeavor to, you know, tell what I thought without any alternative truths. And then it said, wait a second, you know, like when I look back at the clock and the time, I've been here for a long time. Only 5 to 6 years of my life was Del Rascals. How about the rest of my life? And that's how this happened. Seriously. And it started to be like, wow, it's been quite a road, you know? And fortunately it's the book keeps, we keep adding chapters to it, which is good.
Yeah. I was wondering, but they say, you know, if you, can remember the 60s, you weren't really there.
Exactly.
Did you have to do a lot of research on yourself to remember, oh, I was here, we were doing this, I did that, like the order in which it all happened? Or, you know, I know in the story, there's stories about Jimi Hendrix and all these other people whose paths you sort of crossed.
You know, it really comes rather easily, you know, except for the actual fine details, you know. Mm-hmm. Because of interviews, such as this, I've kind of repeated the same stories over and over and over. So, you know, they've embedded in my brain. And, you know, the interesting thing is that I'm guilty of the same situation. You know, when we do our live show, people like to hear stories, for example, of how the songs were created, et cetera, et cetera. So you kind of manufacture these stories that sound real cute on stage. You know? Now, did that really happen? I think so. You know,
sure.
I don't know, but it sounds good, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's all in the entertainment world, you know. So I tell you the truth, really, it's a lot of work for any of you who have written a book. I really admire John Grisham, Stephen King, and these people. I don't know how they do it.
How they do it either. And like you said, it's really hard when you're talking about yourself.
Right.
Because you got to come out and be, you know, confident and be yourself and tell all the great things you've done while still being, it's just, I don't know how you do it.
Well, you know, it's the same as a marriage that has a divorce, you know?
Right. I
mean, which part of the story would you really want to hear? Would you want to hear the good part? Would you want to hear the bad part? You know, that's the interesting part, is what to say and what not to say.
Yeah. So have you heard from anyone who pops up in the book going, that's not how it went? This is how it went.
They haven't read it yet.
Let me know. What was the thing you were most excited to share? What was the thing you couldn't wait to get down on paper?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, that's a really good question, because, you know, I had the really good fortune of studying with a guru all those years. And, you know, I really feel like, you know, when we, you know, meaning anybody who's kind of in the entertainment world, have an opportunity to speak either through our music or, you know, through, you know, words, you like to kind of tell people the good things about your life. And that was really a good thing about my life. I met this gentleman. He was the man who opened up the Woodstock festival. He changed my life, seriously, from head to toe. And that's really the part that really, I really wanted to emphasize, is the effect that he made on my life.
That's amazing. What do you think people will take from that?
Well, I think, you know, they can see from me right now, I'm 79 years old. And with all due respect, knock on wood, I can still sing, I can still walk, I can still entertain. Yoga had a lot to do with that, and the philosophies of keeping your body and your mind healthy. You know, I used to really spend a lot of time with him, because I was like, you know, I was really a disciple, but I was also very, very, very fortunate to have a close relationship with this man who was amazing. He was an amazing guy. And I would ask, he would tell the same people, I mean, the same things to people, no matter what their problem was, whether it was a mental problem, a physical problem, he would tell them, which basically is like the tenets of yoga. You know, you basically, you change your diet, you know, you change your actions. You kind of like, you know, you learn how to do exercises, you learn how to meditate. And I'd say, how come you tell everybody the same thing? He says, because it works.
Yeah, because it's what you need to do.
and it really works. He was in his late 80s. And, you know, he was perfectly functional as far as his body. And, you know, and that's not the case with a lot of people who are my age. My old group is a perfect example.
Are you tired of talking about the Rascals? Because like you said, that was such a small portion of your life and your career even. That,
you know, I hear a lot of people, you know, like, for example, like you had the old famous Ricky Nelson story, you know, like I went to a garden party, you know. I understand what people, you know, want to hear when I go, you know, play a concert. I get it. You know, I understand, you know, it's not about me, you know, it's about, you know, like if the audience wants to hear that, if the people in the interview want to hear that, I'll talk about it. The difficult part is telling the good parts of the story without the bad parts of the story, because unfortunately the bad parts of the story leads to a lot of trouble, you know. Not only just hurt feelings, that's bad enough, but I'm talking about litigation and, you know, things that I purposely kind of left that out of the book, because first of all, I don't think anybody really wants to hear that, you know, but it's kind of a sad story, our story. It really is. The beginning, the middle, and then the end, and then the aftermath. I don't like it.
Well, it's hard because one of our producers and I were just talking, and your music, it's like summer. like you instantly feel like it's sunny and you're warm and you're happy. And so you don't want to hear the bad stuff. You want to just be on that beach rocking out and having a good time.
What I have to do if I want to hear bad stuff is turn on the news.
Well, yeah, we got,
oh boy, we got plenty of it now, don't we?
Yes, we do.
You know, and so you want to come to hear the news? No, I don't think so. You want to come and have a good time, be joyous, you know, you know, it's kind of like the way the Southern churches, you know, do their, you know, and like the New Orleans people, when somebody passes, you know, the first part of it is sad, and then they rock, you know, and it's that part of life, the joyous joie de vivre, as they say, that, you know, thank God I've always had that, you know, and I feel sorry for people who don't have that in there. You know, we have had tragedy in our lives, all of us. But if you have the good fortune of being positively safe as a kid, you bring that to the world, you know? And I really feel badly for these people in Ukraine. Can you imagine? I mean, I can't even imagine what the heck that feels like, you know, to go on about that. I have a lot of friends, Israeli friends, and people whose families, I can't even imagine what those people go through. So anyway, I try to bring the positive, the plus.
Well, and to that end, and to talk about some of your other work outside of The Rascal, something I think a little more upbeat. We interviewed Steve Cropper about a year ago, and we like to consider him a close personal friend of the show. Yes. I think he likes to consider us two idiots who spent 20 minutes with him.
We spent more time with us than that. Half hour.
Somewhere between the two.
Yeah.
What was it like working with him? What's that relationship like? Because you guys have done a few records together now.
Yeah. Well, I've known Steve since the Atlantic days. You know, he was part of the Stax world. And, you know, it's interesting. It started with, of course, the fact that he had Booker T, an organ player, that he was part of. And, of course, that was my instrument as well. And then what happened was one day, Atlantic was a very small company. In the old days, you know, it was really like very interesting because the studio, the mastering, the secretaries and the hierarchy were all on the same floor. Yeah. They were all on the same. I wouldn't even call it a building. It was a floor. And so there was a really symbiotic kind of like relationship between this room where the music was being made and that room where the decisions were being made. Well, we did this song called Groovin'. Before we ever even got it out into the marketplace, Mr. Cropper brought it to his band, the Booker T, and said, we're going to do an instrumental version of this. So now we're on the same page.
You know? It's amazing.
And they made such great music, and we've always, you know, liked and respected them. And then as the years went by, I moved to Nashville, Tennessee, which is where I reside right now. Well, Nashville, Tennessee is really Music City. You know, I mean, it's kind of changed right now. I don't know if you're aware of it. We're the number one bachelorette capital of the United States. So if you have any prayers, please say them for us. But in the meantime,
I had to go to one of those.
You did down here?
Oh, yeah.
So you know, and you made it back alive. Well, good for you. Yeah.
Because I was able to listen to some great music and kind of veer off and not be here.
It's gotten really out of hand down here. But I mean, I tell this story a lot, but I like to say it again because your viewers may not have heard this. When I first moved here, some people come up to me and said, hey, you know, there's a bank over there that caters and helps out songwriters, publishers, and musicians. I said, no, you're kidding. He said, yeah. He says, there's a whole department there just for that purpose. I said, wow, it's just like New York, only New York, the department was called the Exit. And, you know, yeah. I felt welcomed the first time we got, they actually know what we do. That's what we do, you know? And so a friend of mine moved from Manhattan here, and he's one of these fellows that he doesn't drive, you know, because not a lot of people in New York have never driven in their life, you know. So he said, why don't you guys come over to my house and, you know, let's do some writing. Well, he brought Steve over and he brought me over. And we started making what we consider to be demos, you know, songwriting demos. And then he said, why don't we go get a record deal? And I said, why don't you go and get the record? Right. We were really not interested. We were really not interested. You know, we've done our thing with that, you know, and, you know, it's a young man's game pretty much. I mean, you know, the kids, the young people, they buy the products for the most part, and they want to buy their peers. But I said, okay, we'll do it. So that's how that happened. And it's interesting working with Steve because, you know, I mean, I can tell you a little bit about it because, you know, I like technology, you know, I like, you know, like the new, like, for example, what we're doing here, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, we wouldn't have been able to do this. So I brought the technology to the studio and he freaked out.
Oh, I bet. I bet he was like, what is this? What's happening right now? He freaked
out. I said, no, check this out, man. We can, you know, we don't even need a drummer right now, man. I got all these drummers right here, you know. Yes. Oh, man. So it was really an interesting, you know, kind of like relationship that, you know, with all due respect, you know, I understand that process, but this is pretty interesting what we have today with the internet and the computers.
It is. Really, and in talking to a lot of fellow musicians and legends like yourself, you know, it's weird, but thank God for the technology coming through these past couple of years, because it's allowed people to record together in different parts of the world and get in the same room.
Very well put, because that's exactly what happened to me. I was starting an album and I was, you know, trying to finish a book and we couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
But I was able to do it this way.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It's almost like a miracle. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, seriously, I mean, I don't know how much you do know about, you know, the music computer technology of today. But I mean, I have right here on this keyboard over here, I've got the Mormon Tabernacle Choir right here on my finger. Yeah. I mean, and I'm serious. That's right here, sitting right here. I don't have to hire anybody.
It's amazing.
I can only imagine if Beethoven and people like that had something like this, we wouldn't be able to believe it. Although they did pretty well, so.
Yeah, they did pretty well. They're still on heavy rotation.
Yes, so. Exactly. Did pretty well.
Yeah, still have some fans out there, yes, Ludwig exactly. And the guys.
You've been writing and recording for so long. Do you still enjoy it? Do you still get a kick out of it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You ever surprise yourself as you're writing stuff? You're like, oh, this is pretty good. How do you know you've got something?
Good, you know, I mean, yeah. You always think it's good. If you don't think it's good, you know, like, you know, it's... You know, it's that old, you know, positive energy versus negative energy. You know, like if you don't think it's good, nobody else is going to think it's good.
Right.
But, you know, there's a joy in writing that, you know, can you imagine? I mean, if they told Picasso and people like that, well, you're 60 years old now, stop painting. No, I mean, you know, that's not right, because look at all the work we would have lost. Well, if it was up to the industry, that's what would happen. You know, you'd go off to pasture, you know. But because of the technology and because of the fact that this town is really based around songwriting, I've been able to continue and continue to write. And I really enjoy it. And you meet a lot of people that way. You know, you meet a lot of fellow writers that way. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes you just make a good friend, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But Nashville is very, has in the past, very open to collaboration. Yeah. That's one of the good things about here. You know, you don't have to, well, you know, you didn't used to have to make an appointment and get on a schedule, you know. You just meet someone, you know, socially, why don't we write together, you know, and it happens.
See, that is something that's so magical and so rare, and you don't find it in other cities.
It is, especially, you know, coming from New York and, you know,
right, because everyone's so protective of their stuff. No one wants to, and it's so much.
That's another thing, you know. When I came down here, they got this place called the Bluebird. You know, have you heard of the Bluebird? It's like, it's like where everybody goes and plays their songs. And the first time I went there, I noticed people writing down all their ideas.
Uh-huh. Like, oh, I'm gonna take that one.
That's what's going on here.
Now we know.
Uh-huh. Get it. Now I get it.
And you're about to, or are you out on the road? No, you're about to head out on the road, correct?
Well, we're getting back, you know, because of, you know, the COVID here. We've had a lot of cancellations and a lot of postponements and a lot of, you know, I had many shows with the Beach Boys and they all kind of passed and I ended up doing one or two. And it was really interesting because the last time I worked with them, we really had some very serious conversations, you know, like it was right after Rolling Stones drummer passed.
Oh, after Charlie.
And it was really interesting because, you know, we're the same generation, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, the reality, wow, you know, that's one of the family there, you know.
Yeah.
And so we really had to, with Mike Love and with Bruce Johnson, we really spent a lot of time. A lot of times, you know, they're like ships passing in the night when you go to do concerts with others.
Right.
You know, they really don't, you know, communicate that much. We spent a lot of time, you know, very interesting.
And it's like interesting you say that, because I think it was Pete Townsend from The Who when saying, you know, well, people always talk about the great loss of somebody like Hendrix or these other musicians. And he was saying, yeah, but they're all my friends. Like, these are people who are personal to me. And I'm sure someone like Charlie Watts and other bands like that, these are all people, you know, you've had, you know, relationships with, either large or small, but you've been in each other's lives for a bit. And it's got to be,
but not only that, but the public feels that way also. I mean,
certainly,
many of my generation, they really know who the Stones are or were, you know. Mm-hmm. And even though they've never met them, they, you know, it's family. You know, it's really, that's the beauty of my generation. I'd say our generation, but you guys look so young. God bless you.
Oh no, there's and the other side of the room, I really, it's all the yoga. But and good lighting and technology of good lighting. But speaking of like owning ourselves, I normally am set up in the living room of my home, and I have the focal point of my living room is a giant picture of Keith Richards. And
oh, really? Wow. Yeah.
He's always with me. So we're with you.
So you know then. Yeah, it's really interesting. But
and we were very excited to talk to you. So it goes far beyond the Stones. So.
But that communication was part of our generation, you know, because we did not have the social media and the internet and the Instagram and the craziness that brings. We had each other's music. And I do this on stage. I say this, you know, it's a pleasure to play and sing for people who really know and feel that time, because we were all connected by the radio, by, you know, the events. We wrote songs about our existence, you know, for want of a better word, you know, love affairs or, you know, divorces or whatever. It came out in the music, whereas now, wow, it's pretty scattered.
And there's a reason, I think, and I'm sure you see it at your shows, generations of families, people who grew up with these records and played them for their kids. And just the fact, the strength in what you were writing then had that durability to last till today and beyond, which I'm sure you weren't writing it with that.
Like, you know, a lot of events have happened. And you know, I don't know if people realize, you know, that music is really a very powerful medium. You know, all over the world, you know, I had this gentleman one time, I was working, I believe it was up near Albany, New York. And it was an outdoor show. And this fellow came up to me and he said, can I speak to you for a minute? And I said, yeah, of course. You know, he said, look, I want you to have these. And he gave me his dog tags. And I said, man, what is that about? He says, you saved my life. And I said, oh, really? What happened? What is this? He said, well, I was in Vietnam. I was in the Navy ships that go up the Mekong Delta to pick up the wounded. And you all were on Hullabaloo. And I said to the captain, I said, you mind if I not take this boat? Because I want to see the rascals on Hullabaloo. And that boat was destroyed.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Well, when somebody tells you that face to face, you just go, oh.
And gives you their dog tags. Yeah.
I still have
them. Oh my gosh.
And you know, like, you hear stories like that, you say, I see. Okay. Yeah. We're all brothers and sisters.
And I'm sure these songs reaching people in ways you never imagined them doing it, and having that resonance that you never saw coming.
You don't know that, but again, through the guru and through the people that you meet that are on a kind of like a different level, you realize, you know, the power of words, the power of music. Be careful what you say, because you're going to affect people, and you can affect them this way, you can affect them that way, you know. But if you want to affect them here, you gotta speak from here. So here to here is right there, you know, and that sunk in, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's an amazing world. You go to Japan, you know, they don't know what we're talking about. But man, they know the songs and they know the right. words and they know the music, you know. And I had one guy come up to me, this guy says, I want to be your son.
Like, oh, okay. Well.
I said, wow, how cool. You know, they're just so joyous, man. You know, they hear the music and they're like little children almost. Yeah. Wow, I love this. I love this. I loved it. You know, you can't manufacture that. You know, that's what it's all about.
Well, and that is the beauty of a song too. I mean, we're great lovers of film and all the arts and all of it, but there's something about a song that in such a short time frame, you can have such a connection to that music and everyone you're with. And I think it happens faster than any other form of art.
Well, I agree. You know, when you know, we were pre-MTV, you know, when MTV came out, although it really kind of spurred, you know, the interest in the music business again after the disco era, a lot of people were disappointed in the video version of their imagination.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I liked it better in my brain than on your screen, you know, and that says it all right there. You know, like I'm much more adventurous in my brain than you are with your screen. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know I want to be cognizant of your time and I really appreciate you giving us so much. But every night when you're out on stage, is there one song that you just... you still love playing, you still love looking out and watching people's faces as you're playing them?
Well, yeah, I mean, but they're all like that. You know, it depends, you know, like, you know, the fact that, you know, we're human beings as well on this side of the microphone, you know, so like, for example, you know, like if you're, you know, you're dealing with, you know, like we just came back from Florida, you know, and wow, it's a beautiful morning out there. You know what I'm saying? I think I'll go out, you know, that resonates. You know, right. And then of course when you turn on the horrible news that's going on, now you realize people really have to be free. They really got to be free. This is time for, you know, I was reading a lady that somebody from Mississippi, I think her name was Fannie, Hammer. She said in her writings, nobody's free until everybody's free.
It's true.
And you think about that, you know.
That's very true. So,
but I mean, here we are 2022 and, you know, have we really progressed? I think so. Although I tell you the truth, I'm really not sure, you know. In some ways, you know, we have. In some ways, it's pretty bad, you know. And I really can't figure that out because I'm just going to have to do a little thinking about that. All the world over is it?
Memoir of a Rascal, the autobiography of Felix Cavallari, is available right now. For more information and to see where he's playing this spring on tour with Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees, check out his website, felixcavallarimusic.com.
You can check us out on all the various socials. Be sure to visit our website at rockandrollgradschool.com. And don't forget to leave us a review.
Today's show is produced by myself and Heidi Hegquist. Our reluctant producers are John Sauvé and Sandy Stone. Our willing producers are Rachel Allen and Randy Jeanette. Our intern is Zach Jackson. This one's for Philippe. Thank you, good night, and may all your favorite bands stay together. If there's a man